KMOX at your service. Welcome to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Presented by Suburban Leisure Center on Olive, 1 mile west of 141. Now, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
Good morning, good Saturday. We're off and running home improvement. 2 hours today, a special guest in the wings. All things related to your home, office, building, your fancy cardboard box, wherever you live, we're here talking about your home improvement show. Right here, this is the Helitech Home Improvement Show. My name is Scott Mosby. 2 full hours, lots of phone lines, phone calls, questions and answers from you. We exchange all the information we can within our family of KMOX. Phone lines open right now at your very button call. So dial the phone. You and I know what that means. You realize there's a significant percentage that doesn't really get what a dial reference means. Interesting. Well, history is abound in KMOX here. We look back and look forward in all of our programming shows here on University of KMOX. Phone lines for you to share your knowledge, your questions, anything you want to talk about here for 2 hours related to your home, buildings, and places we take shelter. 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900. Toll free if you can get a signal, a phone, or an internet connection, 800-925-1120, 800-925-1120. Ways to tune in, KMOX AM 1120 on the dial, also KMOX.com, our website, great website. If you haven't seen it recently, I urge you to log in and check it out. It's a great way to take me along with you and all of the hosts and the shows and programming here on KMOX. KMOX.com. Also, we have an app or application for smartphones, and that is radio.com, R-A-D-I-O.com, radio.com, kind of a handy thing. And I tune in with stations all over the country, KMOX, whatever, because I can, and that's part of the benefit of radio.com. It's got a quick look back, so you can rewind 20 seconds and listen to whatever that product, topic, or answer I might have asked or a question I might have asked. But that goes on our phone lines here. So we're going to share, connect, and get back and forth. 314-436-7900. Toll-free 800-925-1120. We've got rain coming up next week, so I think we'll have a little bit to talk about with our guest. Waiting in the wings, I have Randy Pantano of Helitech. Randy's been with us many times. He's been with Helitech for many, many years, and he'll be helping us through some of the questions, answers, topics around foundation repair, you know, dewatering basements, cracks, foundation, all the things related that really come and go, hopefully, on our repairs, improvements, right here on the Helitech Home Improvement Show. So Scott Mosby at the helm again, 314-436-7900, toll-free 800-925-1120. We'll get to Randy here in a couple minutes, so stay tuned. Let's see what's cooking here with, you know, let's get right to the phone lines. Why not? I've got Bosco in the background turning out 50,000 watts. Let's get her done. How about Nancy? Hey, Nancy, welcome to KMOX. Good morning, and how can I help?
Good morning. I'm doing a bathroom remodel, and I want to do a tile surround in my shower. So what okay. do I put on the floor? Can I put tile on the floor, or should I do a solid base?
Either way, you can use a, you know, like a unit, a fiberglass, or, you know, a pre-made base. You just have to coordinate that color with the tile, and it depends what you're looking for. It will come with a curb. So the question that you're asking me, kind of inherent in that question, Nancy, is do I want to have a 4-inch step-over curb? Or if you go into a tile base, you can actually drop that floor down on what's called zero entry or a very low threshold to where you really have no, you know, virtual trip hazard. But there's no hard and fast rule. If you're going to do a tile surround, we put money in with the unit bases, and we put the tiles in as well, too. So it's
okay,
a six.
So what would be my water barrier if I do tile? Because I would like a zero entry, but I'm worried about water.
Well, actually, it's pretty easy to handle. It's the old pans that we used to put into the tile bases. I mean, tile setters have been doing tile bases for, man, you know, 100 years. It used to be an old lead line thing where we'd actually make lead pan liners. Now it went to a vinyl liner, and now a lot of it is liquid because as we would use a sheet vinyl, it was hard to crease. You know, it's like folding sheets. You've got rings and, you know, seams and double layers and things like that. So now a lot of it is liquid. You drop the floor down about 2 inches so that you've got enough base, you know, so you put the cement in there, you slope the cement somewhat, tile setter comes in and shapes that to a pre-tile, so it would be down, you know, they actually do their own pan molding, if you will, out of the thin-set mud, and then they will waterproof it with a liquid brush-on, paint-on supply, so that becomes a, you know, vinyl liner that in liquid form has no seams. So that's why it's taken off now a lot. And it goes into a special floor drain for that shower that likewise will take shower down or water down through the top and also from that membrane, whether it's a sheet or liquid, so it comes in the side of that as well. So that that's a 10 out of 10 skill for, you know, and that needs to be done by somebody with that experience.
Okay, that sounds good. Thanks for your help.
Yeah, Nancy, it's, you know, six of one, half dozen of the other. It's really what look do you want? I will warn you, if you're going to get into a zero entry in a framed area, you're now cutting down into the floor joists, so there will be a little bit of structure involved, carpentry involved, and more planning. But it's a forever floor for a shower, and, you know, you really miss the whole trip hazard thing.
Okay, because I have a marble base now, so when that comes up, they still may have to go down further.
Yes, 2 inches usually below that, maybe 2.5, depends on, you know, the tile. And if you do choose a tile floor, for example, you may have 12 by 12 tiles on the wall, 12 by 24. You can even get 2 feet by 4 foot tiles now. But if you go to the floor, you will wind up with probably 2 inch by 2 inch square or very small tiles because that's what's required to sculpt that slope and to, you know, work around the tile drain too.
Oh, okay. That sounds good. Thank you so much.
All right, Nancy. Good luck.
Thanks.
You bet. Home improvement, one under our belt already, 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. With me now, I have Randy Pantano of Helitech. Randy, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Yes, good morning, Scott.
How are you this fine Saturday, Randy? Busy day for Mr. Pantano here?
Yes, we are doing great. Helitech is now celebrating over 34 years of being in business, 5 decades now. Over 100,000 homes we've done work on.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, Scott, we've expanded now. We've got a new office in the Quad Cities, Columbia, Missouri now, another office. We've doubled the size of the KCFL office, also doubled the size of our St. Charles office. Helitech is growing, and we're excited about this year.
Nice. Randy, will you stick around for a little bit here? I'm going to take a short pause, but will you stick around with us for a bit?
Yes, sir.
All right, Randy Pantano, Helitech, Scott Mosby here, KMOX. We'll take a short pause for this and be back for more right after this.
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show, presented by Suburban Leisure Center on Olive, 1 mile west of 141. Now, once again, your host, Scott Mosby on KMOX.
All right, back together, University of KMOX, phone lines for you, 314-436-7900, 436-7900, toll-free 800-925-1120, 800-925-1120. I have Randy Pantano of Helitech here. If you've got any basement questions related to, you know, repair, waterproofing, structural improvements, whatever it takes, you know, we've got Randy in the wings, so bring it on. Randy, thanks for sticking around here.
Yes, thank you for asking, Scott. You know, old Helitech jingle is heal your home with Helitech. I'm excited to let you know that we've got a new program this year called Helitech Home Health Checkup.
Ooh!
You can find this on our website, and we will do this at no charge if you schedule by January 31st. And it's normally $299, but absolutely free if you call this month.
Tell me about that. What all do you check, Randy?
Yeah, there's actually a 12-point home checklist that we do, in particular the sump pump especially. We test that. For example, the check valve on it, the battery backup, if it's on there, or you can even install one. Yeah. The discharge line fittings, connections, things like that can come loose. Any alert system on there. The discharge line is a big one where it's located at. A lot of people don't know where it comes out of the yard, or it's clogged, or it gets grass, weeds over it, and that's no longer discharging the daylight. We even clean out the pits. Things get in there, especially with pets and kids. Mm-hmm. Look around the exterior of the house. Make sure your gutters and downspouts are drained away at least 6 to 10 feet. Check yard graining and slope as far as the grades being positive grade away from the house. We can also check any benchmarks that we would have put in for possible sediment, check elevations. We can also install benchmarks. If you think you've got some sediment, we can monitor your house once a year and check for a possible vertical or horizontal movement. Also, interior inspections of leaks, getting ready for spring rains we've got coming up. You want to check for water entry points. We do all that. And that's part of the home checkup. And again, it's absolutely free.
Hey, Randy, tell me about a benchmark. You and I exchange that word a lot. Explain a little bit to our listeners what and why a benchmark and why you watch that over time, please.
Yeah, it's very hard to predict progressive settlement. For example, I've go to houses and say, oh, that crack's been here for years. They don't think nothing about it, or they notice the crack's getting worse. And again, you just can't really predict the progression. So the only way to do that is to have some history. And how we do that is we actually put a set screw in. For example, if you get a brick home, we would do it in a brick mortar line, and we would check the elevations with what's called a transit. And we mark those elevations down at each point, usually about every 8 to 10 feet. Mm-hmm. And we record that, and then we let it go through the four seasons, and we check those elevations again to be sure if they're right or if they've settled or moved. And we can do that for 1 year or 5 years or as many as necessary to monitor any movement. And then you know the rate of progressive when you do the monitoring system that we offer.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Hey, will you stick around? We've got some basement questions here on the line.
Sounds good.
All right, Randy Pantano, Helitech. Let's start off and go with my friend Paul. Hey, Paul, good morning. Welcome to KMOX. How can we help you, sir?
Good morning. Thank you, sir. Hey, I have a question about a sump pump operation. I'm in a duplex with two or sump pump in each house, and the sump pump system is interconnected between both houses before the foundation was poured. My particular sump or well is sealed with a plastic guard as part of a radon gas system mitigation, so I can see the sump pump down below, and of course through the plastic, covering, which is sealed with caulk. My question is, if my sump pump fails, what would water do as far as coming up and overflowing? Would it be resisted by the plexiglass over the top, or would it default over to my neighbor's sump pump with the assumption that the systems are relatively level?
Okay, interesting question. Is this all in one big open basement with a sump pump left and right, or do you have separate basement areas?
Separate basement areas.
Okay. Randy, can you help Paul here?
Yes, sir. Yeah. The water would probably come up through floor cracks, and in particular with a wall and floor meet. I doubt it would break that seal, but you will have water infiltration in your basement through any type of cracks, either in the floor or wall or the natural cold joint where the wall and floor meet.
And okay. So I have to rely on the sump pump working, I guess, so it doesn't basically prevent the water from coming up.
Right.
It'll come other places.
That is correct, and that's why we always recommend either have some type of water alarm for failure or a secondary pump other than your primary pump that can kick in if the primary fails, such as a battery backup. A pump would be an excellent idea in your situation, so you got the peace of mind of two pumps if one fails.
Okay, I understand that. So my neighbor's sump pump wouldn't be the savior in all these things. If mine broke, hers would take over and keep me safe.
It would not, sir. The footing separates the buildings. You should even have a firewall between them, and it would be two different systems and would not take care of yours.
Okay, well, I think my construction may be a little bit different from what you're describing, but I hear what you're saying. Okay, thank you, gentlemen. That answers my question.
Okay, Paul, thanks for the call.
All right. Okay.
Yep. And if there's concrete, you know, four sides on each of those basements, you would indeed have that footing as you're referring to, Randy. I get it.
Yes.
And the drain tile would likely, or, you know, whatever water collection they've got would likely be, you know, self-contained with each side, I think.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's see what's cooking here, see what's up next, and let's talk with Kevin. Hey, Kevin, good morning. Welcome to Cam Wexler. How can we help you?
Scott, how are you?
Fantastic. Happy Saturday to you.
Yes, yeah, same to you. I have a front porch, concrete porch, and it's on a poured footing, so, you know, it's up raised off the ground on a footing. And I'm in the process of finishing my basement, and anytime it rains or snows, there's like a quarter-inch slope going towards the house versus away from the house. So I'm afraid, well, I'm not afraid. I don't want to finish my basement until I have that issue solved.
What is a quarter-inch slope toward the house? What is slope?
The concrete. My concrete pour. Yeah. It may not even be a quarter of an inch, but anytime it rains or snows, I have water going in between my house and my footing on my concrete.
I got it. So that porch actually drains to and through into your basement then?
Yes.
Got it. Randy, help. What you got, brother?
Yes, I commend the caller for being proactive and being on top of this instead of it's too late when your basement is wet. So it's a good thing you notice this now rather than later. And it's a great application, what we call polyjacking. Years ago, it was mudjacking. That's kind of the older technology. We use the polyjacking now. That's a whole size of a dime instead of an inch and 5/8. And I'm sure you've heard of this great stuff, foam in a can for insulation. It's very similar to that structural foam that we would pump underneath the porch and fill any void and possibly lift it up where you got a quarter inch going the other way.
So you're going to be able to inject this into the top of the concrete and it's going to raise the footing? Or I thought maybe you could maybe do like a stamped concrete maybe and slope it away from that. Is that possible?
Well, yeah, there is stamping concrete, like you said, but it's still on the same level as the patio. You don't really stamp the concrete for cosmetic reasons, not for sloping reasons. So I would certainly make sure it's good and solid first with the polyjacking and then consider stamping.
Yeah, maybe we can get you out there to inject this stuff you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'd take a look at that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think I'll do that. I'll kind of get a hold of you.
Sounds good.
What's your phone number there, Randy?
Yes, our phone number is 1-800-246-9721, or you can reach us at helotechonline.com.
Perfect. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go up and see what's happening with my friend Margaret. Hey, Margaret, Scott Mosby, Randy Pantano, how can we help you there? Hello, Margaret. Did I hit the right button? There we go.
Okay. I have an older home, the 1950s pink tile in the bathroom. And I was wondering if you know somebody that glazes or paints ceramic tile.
Yes, we do. I'd invite you to call the Mosby Building Arts office. We keep a file of people that we recommend for that. It is done, especially on the walls. It's successful. And you can paint the floor of that shower as well, or tub. Tubs glaze out really well. Walls do. Any place where water sits. So shorter term times for that paint. And it's really an epoxy type paint that goes on reglazing the tiles. But, you know, give us a call at the office at Mosby Building Arts, 314-909-1800.
909-1800.
Yes, ma'am.
And, okay, thanks.
You bet. Good luck, Margaret. I have a great story to tell about my aunt on pink tile. And this was, she had a beautiful home built in the 50s for her by my father. And it came time to redo her kitchen. And this has been 25, 30 years ago. And I said, great, you know, and this was my Aunt Nan. I said, Aunt Nan, what, you know, what color would you like to replace, you know, the pink tile? And she said, replace? She said, I want to design around. I mean, it was still her color, you know, and so we remodeled this kitchen around pink tile again. So everybody has their color and their choice, and, you know, it turned out pretty doggone good, too. Phone lines here at KMOX, 314-436-7900-800-925-1120. Randy Pantano of Helitech standing by. Scott Mosby here of KMOX. We're going to take a short pause. Be back for more after this.
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show, presented by Suburban Leisure Center on Olive, 1 mile west of 141. Now, once again, your host, Scott Mosby on KMOX.
All right, hour one, home improvement. Two full hours today, lots to talk about. We've got rain coming next week. We are in the chilliness of the winter. Certainly lots to talk about on that. Randy Pantano is with me from Helitech. Randy, thanks for coming in this fine Saturday morning.
Yeah, appreciate you having us. It's always a pleasure, Scott.
Tell me what's up for you later in the day, and what's the busy things you're looking at Helitech? What type of work is bubbling up with our current weather conditions?
Yes. Well, as you know, with this pandemic, everybody's working from home and on Zoom calls, and they're sitting at their desk and they're noticing cracks they never had before. Mm. And the drywall off windows, windows and doors sticking. So a lot of settlement. As you know, it's been so dry. We're really looking forward to that rain next week to moisten up these soils. So it's a lot of crack calls here. Expansion settlements, things like that. Like the previous caller mentioned with his front porch, we've got trip points on sidewalks, garage floors going down, especially by the step, patios, et cetera. So just a lot of settlement calls with cracks, and people are noticing it more and more because they're working from home.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Randy, how do people get in touch with Helitech? What's the best way to contact you?
Yeah. Again, the number is 1-800-246-9721, or you can reach us on the web at helitechonline.com.
Randy Pantano of Helitech. Randy, thanks for joining us, and see you when you get back next time.
Sounds good, sir. Have a great day.
All right. Bye now. Helitech, 800-246-9721. Thanks to Randy for coming in on this busy Saturday. Next up, let's talk with my friend Mike. Hey, Mike, good morning. Welcome to KMOX. How can we help you? Hey, Mike, are you there? Scott Mosby here standing by. Please listen to your phone and not your microphone.
Can you hear me? I'm sorry.
Yeah, Mike, you're on. How can we help?
Yeah, so I had a painter come in and last year, painted my bedrooms and the walls, the trim, the doors. And for some reason, and I've never seen it before, but for some reason, all the paint on all the trim and all the doors is starting to flake off. They had already been painted once before, and I just don't understand. I don't understand what happened, but I'm trying to figure out how best to fix this issue. I don't know if I need to go in and sand all the doors and trim down. The walls are fine, but the doors and trim are just flaking.
Well, I think there was a bonding problem or incomplete preparation of those surfaces. When you have all of the trim paint, the new paint obviously didn't stick, bond, or combine with the layer below that. I'd call that painter back. This is what I consider to be a warranty issue on a bonding material and on a product selection. But what's ahead is a couple of different things, either sanding the whole thing down, you know, kind of rubbing off what you can with the sandpaper, wearing it down. There is a bonding product. There's a chemical you can apply to that that kind of fuses those two together. Is kind of a primer, and then you go over the top of that with a primer as well, and then you get back into your paint. So now you're kind of undoing what was done before. And I will tell you, it's not unheard of. Sometimes even a great painter will put a product on and the product is flawed. So, you know, don't be afraid to ask the painter back and say, hey, you know, here's what I've got. And, you know, a year and a half it should last longer than that.
Okay. Thank you very much, Scott. I appreciate it.
You bet, Mike. And you know, the good ones will respond and be there for you. So, you know, fear not. It's a good company doesn't want their name on something like that. So, you know, for us, we would jump all over that and correct that, because we want you to think good things when you look at that paint, not bad things. So you'll understand the quality of the painter when you talk to him.
All right, sir. Thanks.
Okay, Mike. Take care. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby, KMWX, have phone lines open for you, 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120, 800-925-1120. Now, when we're in the winter time like this, do you have a mud room, you know, a room where you come in off the garage or from the outside, and it's a handy transition room? It's one of the more popular things at Mosby Building Arts that we like to design in if we have the space for that, is kind of a transition room from the outside to the inside. Trash, recycling, you know, everybody's got that stuff. Sometimes it has to be designed into the kitchen or in that garage, but a mudroom, laundry room, really in design sense, it's kind of a transition room where you're kind of halfway between in and out. Love it for recycling, a laundry room, storage. You know, where do you keep the batteries? You know, where do the batteries go? Where do the, you know, the little feet for the furniture, little things like that that may not go out in the garage, they may not go in the house. So lots of things like that. Pets wind up in the mudroom as well. Storage, for those of you that have hockey-playing kids, you know, soccer or whatever, you know, generally they come in and boom, right on the floor somewhere, oftentimes right in the middle of the kitchen. So think about the benefits of a mudroom, laundry room, or utility room for pets, kids, and just transition. Let's see what's up here and get a see who's talking. Now let's talk with Barb. Hey, Barb, Scott Mosby here. How can we help you? Oh, wait a minute. Barb, are you there? What? Let me get the right button. Hold on a minute. Barb, are you there? Okay.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Can
sorry.
You hear me?
My apologies. Yeah, we can now. My big fat fingers had a hard time finding that.
Okay. Hey, I live in a brick 50s ranch or cottage or whatever with a poured basement. I would like to know if there's any way to insulate the basement walls after the walls have already been finished with drywall. There's a one-inch gap. I can tell from one of the closets down there that the previous owner had put, like, I guess, like one-inch strips and then attached the drywall to that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's hard to do. Primarily, the best way to insulate that, and it's a furred out wall, so they actually secured what we call furring strips or boards onto the concrete. So there really isn't the volume or the space to insulate that. You could inject foam to that, kind of like a spray foam that's injected, but it's so thin that it's really impractical and it'll be semi-ineffective. So the answer is yes, and no, I wouldn't recommend it. If I were going to insulate that, I would pretty much put rigid insulation over the drywall and re-drywall over the top of that again. So I would actually sandwich foam in there and then cover it up again with another layer of drywall. So it gets a little pricey, but that's the way I would recommend it.
Well, could I follow that up with several years ago there was a ceramic paint that came out that was supposed to reflect heat back into your rooms. Is that still out there?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. That stuff was developed by NASA in some of its heat reflective technology long, long time ago, and it's now widely used in industry. So there is a reflective paint. Keep in mind that that tends to reflect the heat that's already there, but there's radiation, you know, basically the temperature of the drywall will also draw some of that heat off. So yeah, if you're willing to repaint, I would sure consider that. It's a pricey paint, and it'll be somewhat, I'm not sure that you'll noticeably feel a warmer basement like you would if you insulated.
Okay.
But
thank
something's
you
better
so much.
Than nothing. It's a great idea, I think, Barb.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye.
Home Home Improvement, Scott Mosby, KMOX. We're talking about basements and sump pumps and shower bases, windows and doors and trim and all those things with paint, and now into a how to insulate a basement. And primarily, when I talk to people about insulating a basement, one of the questions is, well, I'm finishing my basement. Should I or should I not insulate it? And it's kind of the issue that Barb faces that, you know, once you finish that basement, it's really hard to go back and add the insulation, so it gets to be an incremental cost. My advice is, you know, if you've got a dry basement, then insulate it while you're finishing that area, because you just can't get back to it if you want to add it later. So it's easy to add in that construction phase. It's very, very difficult and costly to retrofit, and it's of limited value as well. Let's see who's up next. Let's talk with, how about Ron? Hey, Ron, Scott Mosby.
Hi.
Kim Wex, how can I help you, sir?
If you have some foundation leveling work done, mm-hmm. do you continue to monitor those benchmarks for a period of time?
Oh, I would. I sure would. If you've got any cause for it, why not? It's possible to do, and it does tell a story. More information doesn't hurt. So I would actually follow up with benchmarks if you can.
Okay, well, if the benchmarks were in there to monitor mm-hmm. the foundation repair, about how long would they monitor it following the repair work?
I don't know. That varies with each company, but if you're concerned or curious, you just call them back and have them come back and monitor those things. Certainly, if there's cause for concern of additional movement, you would notice something in a crack, or, you know, there'd be other telltale signs that might be more noticeable than the benchmark. The benchmark is used for, okay, we know we've got a crack here, how much? So the benchmark is that constant reference.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You bet. Take care, Ron. Good question. I don't know what the follow-up benchmark monitoring might be, but sure seems like a good idea. Particularly, people say, well, do I cover up my, I had my house, my basement waterproof, do I cover it up? I kind of like to take a look at those things and monitor that for, you know, a one rain season, see how it goes, make sure everything is as you expect it to be. Phone lines here on KMOX 314-436-7900, toll free 800-925-1120, 800-925-1120. You can follow us here on KMOX.com or radio.com. Take me with you, take us with you, and follow KMOX as you go into everyday life. I'm going to take a short pause for now and come right back after this.
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show, presented by Suburban Leisure Center on Olive, 1 mile west of 141. Now, once again, your host, Scott Mosby on KMOX.
All right, back together, KMOX. Scott Mosby here on University of KMOX. We've got some phone lines open for you, 436-7900. That's 314-436-7900. Toll-free 800-925-1120, 925-1120. Let's get back to the phone lines and talk with my friend Sam. Hey, Sam, good morning. Welcome to KMOX. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning. Thank
yes,
you
sir.
For taking my call.
Okay.
Here's my question.
Mm-hmm.
When you print a lowercase H, I'm looking for a clear gasket that the vertical part of that lowercase H would be possibly 3/4 to an inch tall,
okay.
and the little round hook on the H would
mm-hmm.
push over 1/4 inch thick aluminum or glass. Every place I've called act like I'm from Mars. Nobody seems to have anything. I know they make a straight piece of plastic with glue that you would stick on, but at my age, I don't want to play with no more glue. I wanted something that would push on an edge and raise up to keep the water from splashing under a shower door.
Okay, so you're looking for kind of a like a floor dam. Is that what you're looking for?
Well, if you would take a piece of scratch paper and print a lowercase
right. H,
not
yeah,
a capital H, lowercase, a vertical line and halfway up a little rounded part,
Sure.
And I could push that right rounded part right down on the aluminum edge drip rail, splash rail. I need it taller. Is there such a thing ever made?
Are you talking about affixing this to the moving shower door itself? Is this a hinge or a slider?
This is a slider, but I could put it right on the base.
I see. I'll tell you what, if you're having trouble finding things like this, Sam, there is a wholesale glass supply company online that I can suggest you take a look because you're looking for something pretty unique. There's a wholesale glass supplier cart called C.R. Lawrence, L-A-W-R-E-N-C-E. And I think it's C.R. Yeah, like Cat Robert.
Spell it one more time. C.R.
Lawrence, like name, L-A-W-R-E-N-C-E. Lawrence, like Larry Lawrence. CRLawrence.com. And I know we use a lot of that, but when they were printing catalogs, the catalog was about an inch and a half thick. So when we're looking for really odd things, that's a good place. They will sell directly.
Are they local?
No, I don't even know where they are. It is not in St. Louis, so there's not a place you can go in, but the website is quite full-featured, and you know, many of the pieces that the custom shower door manufacturers and the glass places, they'll buy a lot of their product from C.R. Lawrence.
Thank you so much for your service, and what a great help you are.
Oh, you're welcome, Sam. Be prepared for hours and hours going through that to find it, because they may have it, but I've spent quite a bit of time trying to find, you know, and it may not even be a shower door application. It may be a gasket for, you know, windows. And, you know, so you're applying something maybe from another use that might work for what you're looking for.
Right. And the way I'm describing it, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it's kind of it does. I understand what you're describing and what you're trying to do, and keep the water out of that channel somewhat.
Okay, thank you so much.
You bet. Good luck, Sam. Bye now. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby, KMOX. Let's see what else we've got here. I'm going by who's been waiting the longest. Let's talk to Ray. Hey, Ray, Scott Mosby here. Good morning. How can I help you?
Hi. I've got a house in Clayton. It's kind of a typical where you've got a stone basement, and then the basement's got doors that go into like a front cellar that's underneath the porch they use for like coal drop off, right?
Yep.
Okay. So we put in drain tile in the basement. There's a drain tile in that cellar in the front as well. So it used to leak. It doesn't leak anymore, but the walls had been painted with some sort of a white paint to try to seal the wall of some way, and
yes.
It's been peeling off, and it needs to be tuck pointed. And I don't know, do I need to strip all that paint off? And if so, how do I do that? Or can I just go over the areas that look like it's fallen out? And if it's just those areas, I still got to get that paint off somewhere, and I don't know how to do that.
I think what if they did it the right way, it could be a dry lock type paint. It kind of bonds with the cement and creates kind of a crystalline, I don't want to say a barrier, they call it a waterproofing, but it just slows down the water for the most part. And like any other painting, I think, Ray, you would remove whatever comes off. If it's that product, I would leave what's bonded on that stone alone and leave it there, but I would wire brush or sand off anything else that would come off. And that's the issue when you have that much water coming through that stone, and stone is very porous. Actually, limestone is used for a water filter. So think about that. So it is, you know, it does allow water through. But I think then you'll have to get it to a fairly clean and not necessarily dry, but not wet surface, and then you would apply that dry lock paint.
This may sound kind of granular, but so how do I know if I've got it cleared off enough? Because I could see a wire brush, but boy, that would take forever. I don't know what you mean by sanding, though. I mean, because this is covering brick, And then it comes down to brick, and then the brick transitions to stone foundation.
I'm trying to describe a poor man's way to sandblast your wall, because the proper way to remove that paint is to sandblast it and just literally, you know, break it off of that underlying surface, the bonded part and the easy part. Well, you know, I don't know that that's something you can do on sand, but if you can sandblast it, that is the correct way to prepare that wall.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So when I'm saying sanding, it's like, well, good luck there, but, it, you know, it's either that or sandblast.
So when you say sand, what would I use? I mean, sandpaper or like a sander?
Like a granite, like the gray sandpaper. The issue is you've got to really get it off of there, going to be effective, because it's the sandblasting that will take on all those various surfaces. So even your best job sanding is going to be a bad job sanding.
Would it be better than to just use a grinder, like a wire brush grinder? Would that be better?
Yeah, it wouldn't hurt. It gets pretty ugly, but yeah, that you need to get that old product off of there to get the new paint to bond with the stone and the concrete. So,
okay, and then what?
Ray, I got to go. I've got 5 seconds left.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ray. Take care. Scott Mosby, Home Improvement, KMOX Hour 2 next.
KMOX at your service. Welcome to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Presented by Suburban Leisure Center on Olive, 1 mile west of 141. Now, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right, hour two, lunchtime, center of the day. We are in the center of the country. And 11:20, we're pretty much the center of the AM dial. We have one more hour, lots of phone lines for you, questions, topics, good discussions from hour one, lots of things to talk about and have. But for you, your questions are welcome here, 314-436-7900. I invite you to call 800-925-1120 if you're from outside the area, 800-925-1120. But we have lots of abilities to put on the air, and let's talk about whatever issues are pertinent to you. We had a good first hour. We started with a question of reglazing or painting a tile shower. And that is something that is possible, reglazing bathtubs. It's called reglazing. It's actually painting it with a urethane or epoxy paint, usually a primer and then a top coat of something that's a little more pliable than the epoxy. Epoxy is a great binder. It'll stick to just about anything. So that is something that's possible. Also, we had Randy Pantano on the first hour, and they've got a great 12-point checkup that you can call in before January 31st. They'll come out and check your sump pump and cracks, foundations, all those things, discharge, basically a nice checkup for your home. So, you know, that's normally has a charge for it. And, you know, just to kind of make sure the homes in the KMOX listening area are safe and working as they're supposed to, you can give them a call for that 12-point checkup. That's kind of neat. We had quite a few questions about concrete front porches. For those of you that know what I'm talking about, you've seen them. They're basically a raised front porch, usually on a brick home. And it's like it used to be the coal chute or the coal cellar where the coal would be stored for our coal-fired furnaces back when. And now we no longer need that fuel storage on site in the house. So you wind up with this kind of a root cellar, if you will, a concrete box underneath the front porch, some moisture, waterproofing questions related to that, on and on and on. Also, some paint bonding questions and a question of a shower gasket. Sam called and wanted to get a specific piece of rubber to put on the bottom of his sliding shower door. That wholesale supplier that you're welcome to look up is C.R. Lawrence. I think I misspelled it for him. I think it's L-A-U RENCECRLawrence.com, kind of a wholesale glass accessory supplier. The upside is they have a whole lot of stuff. The downside of it is if you find that gasket, you know, Sam might have to buy 100 lineal feet of it to get it. That, you know, they don't necessarily sell in small quantities. They sell primarily to the trade. So quantity is a bit of a problem with that. Phone lines 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. Some of the things bubbling up on the MosbyBuildingArts.com website. Some of the discussions around hardwood flooring, the hardwood flooring trends every year at the top of the year, you know, in January, the industry comes out with the new colors and the new trends. And it's really kind of, you know, looking in the rearview mirror at where we've been and then looking forward into the windshield of the future and really figuring out what the future looks like. How that affects hardwood floors, they tend to be a little bit a little simpler, cleaner looking floor, a little or no texture. So we got into some deep textures. Ceramic tile has that as well in wood grains and good textures. So now back into the hardwood floor, they tend to get a little more smooth, less grainy, and you know, simpler, cleaner. Easy to go. So that's interesting. So natural colors and stains are now popular. And this article is actually on Realtor.com, Realtor.realtor.com. So we've reprinted this with their permission. So keep in mind those things, those conversations. It's kind of fun if you're looking into, you know, remodeling your house, your kitchen, your bathroom, whatever it is. Think about that because trends come and go. For example, all white kitchens. We for a while there we had a lot of white on white countertop, white kitchens, white tile on the walls, and all of that is softening, getting more into a mellowed out hardwood floor and a little more variation and warmth, I would call it. So that's one of the things. Also a rift cut floor, rift, R-I-F-T. So it's kind of a walnut flooring, shows that as well. But anyway, it does show the grain, so it's interesting. And then likewise in ceramic tile as well as hardwood floor, we're getting longer board lengths. And as we engineer or manufacture our wood floors, we're able to have longer because it's hard to get a longer tree. And having a high-quality wood floor, it's hard to get long boards. Anyway, that and more on, you're welcome to check that out at MosbyBuildingArts.com. Or if you can't remember all that, my answer to that is callmosby.com, callmosby.com. Check out some of the, they're called blogs, but B-L-O-G, but they're really just articles that we write and report of what we're seeing, and also plugging in our national network of partners and friends. So we've got similar companies all over the United States that we're involved with on best practices, thought leaders, the Harvard Center for Housing Studies. We serve on that remodeling committee as well. So we encounter a lot of information all over the country and indeed from the world, and we bring that home and publish some of that stuff on MosbyBuildingArts.com or callmosby.com. Let's see if we can get to the phone lines here. I feel like talking to somebody. I'm too windy. Let's see what's cooking here with Terry. Hey, Terry, good afternoon. Welcome to lunch on KMOX. How can I help? Terry, are you there?
Mosby, how are you? Yes, I am. How are you doing today?
I'm fantastic, sir. How are you this fine Saturday?
I'm doing well. I have a bit of a quandary, a problem. I have a house that's 75 years old, and it has a garage door that needs to be replaced. And before I get crazy and do something that I really don't want to get involved in, I'm wondering if I go and hire a contractor, like one of the commercial garage door installers, mm-hmm. Are they required, that they typically go and get whatever required permits are needed to replace a garage door? And the reason I'm asking is I've heard horror stories about where they say that if you replace a garage door that you have to insulate the garage, and you essentially isolate the garage so none of the fumes can get upstairs. And so that's kind of where so I'm wondering if I contract with someone, do they typically have to follow the rules and tell me and go out and get the required permits?
Yes, but replacing a garage door with a door of like kind or similar is a repair issue, and so R&R, repair and replace, that falls outside of that. That's inside the building code, but it normally doesn't require a building permit. Now, if you're going to a glass garage door, then, you know, from a wood to a glass or a steel to a glass, well, now that triggers, because you're changing markedly the material and therefore the safety issues. So that would be a safety glass, a tempered glass. So there would be a permit required for that. But the good door companies all know this stuff quite fluidly. They're quite familiar with it, and they will adhere to those permit issues. But when you're just changing a garage door, whether you're doing it yourself or using a commercial company, and I would use a commercial company. I can install garage doors, but I have to give up a whole day because it takes me for bloody ever to get that door in. These guys are in and out in 2 or 3 hours, and they fix everything along the way. So I would definitely, I do call the pros.
I agree. I probably would typically replace it myself, but they're people who know what they're doing, and then I, you know, would bow to their knowledge. Would be going from wood to, I would suspect, wood to metal, I suppose. Is that going to cause a problem?
Nope, nothing. The questions you will be faced in choosing the door is, do you want to insulate that metal door or just have the metal door? So there are a lot of bells and whistles on garage doors. And as far as the fire separation, the drywall that you got into, that's a different issue. You probably need to get that done on your house anyway. But coming to change a garage door doesn't trigger that. But having a home inspection, for example, for selling the house, that's primarily when the home inspector will say, and when you do this, the city is going to require you to complete the fire safety issues on this house. So that's what that's about.
That can get very ugly because it requires doors and things like that too, I'm afraid.
Yeah, but it's not related to the garage. You can do doors and windows on pretty much any structure without a permit, as long as you're matching similar stuff.
Well, you just said something that concerned me. When the house is sold, would it then be required to have that done?
You betcha. You betcha. You don't have the right to pass down a non-safe home. So that's where they're called occupancy permits. So when you sell your house, what the city, whoever that is, or the county, they want to know that house is being occupied and it's safe, ready. So handrails, fire separation, lighting bulbs, oddly enough, even bug screens. So your window screens have to be repaired. Doorknobs, door locks have to be operating in a condition that you can get out in a fire. So that's, that's separate from a garage door issue.
Okay.
Now, are you talking about the man door, or are you talking about the overhead, like drive your car in and out?
No, the overhead.
Okay.
The garage sits under the living room.
I see.
It's an old-style house. And
sure.
I'm not describing it well, but and I don't want to sell something that's, cause a problem. If I do not replace the garage door, does that still trigger the same problem when the house is to be sold?
Yep. Yeah, it's agnostic to any of that stuff. You still have to have, because there's some things that, you need another outlet. Well, that's a convenience item. That's not so big a deal. But if you have a firebomb called an automobile filled with gasoline parked underneath bedrooms, oh, you bet. The fire code and the occupancy permit, when you go to sell that house, they will make sure that you have corrected that deficiency, even though it may not have been required in the 1950s when the house was built. Now, they don't want any new occupants coming into a really dangerous situation.
Yeah, all right. Well, you've been helpful. I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks for the call, Terry.
Home approval. Take care.
All right, you too. And I'll talk a little bit more about this as we get through this on these occupancy issues and when these things are and why they happen. Because as the house turns over, that is the opportunity for review. And that's why there are these occupancy permits. It's basically the city's right to come in and check out and see that you're up to the current standards. And usually the biggest, the most passionate things they do is that fire separation from the garage to the house, handrail rails. That's a big deal. Door locks, screens, simple things like that. But, you know, if you have a house that's 50 years old and has only one owner and not really kept up with those improvements, yeah, it can be a surprise. Phone lines 314-436-7900, toll free 800-925-1120. Scott Mosby at your service here on KMOX. All right, back together, home improvement. Scott Mosby here. Phone lines open 314-436-7900, toll free 800-925-1120. I'll get into this a little bit, but with Terry, our last caller, in a 75-year-old house, he was asking, does changing my garage overhead door trigger any other requirements for codes? And the answer is no, unless you change to a glass door, which then triggers review, and you know, that the glass be tempered or safety glass, because if that glass breaks in operation and shards come down, you can have some real issues on safety there. But having a fire code drywall or fire separation between the house and the garage, whether it's a ceiling for an under, you know, a basement garage, then if there's a fire and you don't have some site a type of drywall or fire code drywall on that ceiling, that fire can spread very rapidly and really cause loss of life quickly. So that is a big deal. And whether or not that garage door gets changed, that requirement exists. And should the city discover that, they will require it to be corrected or brought up to code. Anyway, let's get back to the phone lines here and talk with my friend Mike. Hey, Mike, Scott Mosby here. How can I help, sir?
Yes, I was looking to see if you could tell me where I could get some floor tile that is no longer made.
What type of tile?
It's a 12 by 12. It's a Mohawk Laredo taupe.
A ceramic tile?
Yes.
No, I don't. I really don't. There are a few tile shops in town that have old stocks, but most of it is for showers, you know, like 4x4 inch tile, things like that, from a plumbing repair. But as far as a 12x12 inch or a floor tile, that would be, I wouldn't even know where to start with that. I mean, you can spend a year and a half looking and find nothing. So the return on the time investment is pretty low.
Right.
Do you have a tile in a closet? Is it possible that you might be able to remove one or two from a non-noticeable place, maybe in a closet or something like that?
Well, the best place, I guess, it would be, I've got it in a basement, but it's on concrete.
Yeah.
So I don't know, you know, how it would be getting that up without breaking it.
It's possible you wind up breaking two out of three. You know, so if you need one tile, you may wind up breaking two or three, and it's very painstaking. It's more of a surgical type removal instead of a whack it with a hammer sort of thing, trying to break that bond. It is possible, but you're probably better off trying to pull up a tile and move it than you are to find something like that. Because even if you do find that tile, even in a ceramic tile, the wear and the color of that tile can be dramatically different to where you wind up. You know, it is just a shiner. It's a, you know, a perfect tile in the middle of an older floor still looks different.
Right. So would you just get a, like a putty knife under that, the edge of that, and work it under?
The first thing you do is you basically remove everything around it. You have to come at it from the side, so you very carefully with a grinder or an oscillating tool will take all the grout out all the way around. If it's a half-inch grout joint, you remove all of it, and you try and come in under the side. So if you can, you get that oscillating tool, and you undercut all the way around, trying to literally saw that tile off. And if possible, if you can use a rope saw, I've seen a rope saw, which is kind of a piece of stainless steel cable that has an abrasive on it. I've actually seen fellows, you know, spend hours sawing a piece of tile off because of the difficulty of, you know, finding one tile.
Right.
And then,
Is that what you would use to cut PVC pipe?
Kind of, but you wind up going through a lot of saws because you pretty much need a diamond cable saw to do all that. But keep in mind that anything that you can do to remove as much of that thin set or cement base underneath that ceramic tile, the better chance you get of having that work. And sometimes I've seen people use dry ice on the surface of that tile, trying to rapidly shrink that tile and break kind of the bond. The problem is once you get it cold like that, you really can't whack it because it's a brittle material. And you will, if you're lucky, get one good one out of three removed.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, good luck, Mike. Well, you're in big, big, big leagues there.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Take care. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby. Let's get to, how about Marilyn? Hey, Marilyn, Scott Mosby here. How can I help
you? Hi.
Hey.
Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
My house was built in 1972.
Okay.
The garage floor has been good, but I have one section, say the last, maybe the last fourth of it has sunk a little bit, mm-hmm. and the one quarter of it has sunk about half inch, maybe,
okay.
and chipped off. Can I have just that portion of the garage door replaced, or do I have to do the whole garage floor?
No, you can actually, the mud jack or poly jack. I know we had Randy Pantano here the first hour from Helitech, and that's a service they can do, is actually lifting that part of the floor. And I would talk to him about checking the rest of the floor, too, because it's effectively injecting a foam, and then as the foam expands and sets, it literally somewhat pushes that slab up. There's more art than craft in that. It's almost black magic on these crews that really do it well, but they can re-level a floor and move it around quite handsomely, yeah.
So the cracks and the pieces of concrete, is that going to be replaced then, or
how many pieces of concrete? How many pieces did this thing crack into?
Well, it's maybe shattered might be a good term for one section of it.
Oh, that no, you can't lift that. You need a big flat piece of unbroken concrete to lift it up like one big piece of plywood, you will. Yeah, once you break it up like that, you're in a remove and replace where you're jackhammering it out. And for the cost of doing a fourth of the floor, it's going to be, almost the same price as replacing the entire floor. So, good money after bad, you're better off just replacing the whole thing.
Okay, that's kind of what I was wondering.
Yep.
Well,
yep.
Thank you very much.
Okay, good question. Thanks for the call, Marilyn.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Right. Bye now. And one of the things that's required in the poly jacking, or you might remember it as mud jacking, the products and the technology has dramatically improved to where it's a poly jacking or a chemical material that lifts these slabs. But it's kind of like blowing up a bicycle tire, that if the air leaks out somewhere, you still can't blow up the tire because it keeps leaking out. Well, if you have a broken concrete slab, one of the things in poly leveling of concrete is they have to kind of seal up the cracks in the edges so that instead of the material coming out around the slab or coming through the many cracks, it won't lift if it keeps oozing or escaping or leaking, just like air out of a bicycle tire. So that's kind of the topic on that. Phone lines are open for you here, 314-436-7900, toll free 800-925-1120. I am Scott Mosby. This is KMOX. We're going to take a short pause and come back for more right after this. All right, back together, Home Improvement. We're in the last 20 minutes of Hour 2. Stay tuned. More KMOX things happening all day long. Lots of fun happening here. Let's go right to our phone lines here, see what's cooking with my friend Carol. Hey, Carol, good afternoon. Welcome to Lunchtime on KMOX. How can I help?
Hi, Scott. Thanks for taking my call, too.
Yeah.
We have a 1970s original wooden garage door, two-car, mm-hmm. and we keep it oiled and serviced. and it looks good, and it's solid and heavy. Mm-hmm. We're considering replacing that door.
Okay.
Because it's kind of looking old. Not on the out exterior for paint, nothing like that, but on the inside, the rails, the little knobs that make it go up and down. We keep it oiled, like I said, and serviced. But our concern is maybe it's time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we looked into online garage doors, and we were just blown away by the choices.
Oh, yeah.
We're not educated in that, obviously. That's why I'm calling. Mm-hmm. We wanted your recommendations on the difference or quality between wood, steel, or fiberglass. Again, we have solid wood. It's heavy. I'm not saying I'm looking for heavy or my husband, mm-hmm. but we just want quality.
Sure, sure.
And safety, of course. And we don't want dings and dents. And could you give us any advice on that whatsoever?
Sure. This is kind of like entry doors. So overhead garage doors are made of many different things. They have lots of different quality lines according to price points and all.
Okay.
So you still can get a wood door. That's possible. They're fairly inexpensive. They are not anywhere near the quality of the door you have on your house now.
Really?
So if you were to go buy another wood door,
sure.
Until you get into the very, very top, you know, mm-hmm. like stained wood, where you're paying a premium, then you're going to get the type of millwork door that you have on your house now.
Okay.
And they're heavy. And the reason they're not popular is because they're not insulated.
Mm-hmm.
They still need the painting, which is, you know, normal. But
true.
The issue is they're heavy, and garage door openers, the automatic openers,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, you need a truck quality garage opener to get mm-hmm. that puppy opened and closed.
It's heavy, right.
It's heavy. You know, and mm-hmm. if a spring fails or something and you have to manually lift that, mm-hmm. you know, 300-pound door, you know, it would take two people to get the door up, and then you have to so anyway, they're not a popular unit. Steel, and then you get into the environment. You get steel doors are very popular because they're economical to make. They are different thicknesses, so just like buying vinyl siding for a house, you've got the stuff that's this thick and the stuff that's thicker than that, and then the stuff that's thicker than that,
mm-hmm.
and how that handles is that answers how dentable or bendable, you know, damage or, you know, tennis balls, baseballs, hockey pucks, stuff like that can affect the door. So I typically like what's considered kind of a commercial door. I like a heavier gauge steel.
Mm-hmm.
And then for reinforcement and sound reasons and insulation, I like to add the insulated package because if you go back to insulate a door later, it's ugly. It's usually a fire problem because I'm sticking foam, which burns. You know, they have a special type of material that goes on the inside of the door, and it actually reinforces that steel a little bit. So, and I'm tipping I have a insulated steel door. Now, there's another one that I particularly have on my house, and it's kind of a sandwich panel. It's like a Coleman cooler where you've got steel on the two sides and then foam injected inside. And it actually gets to be kind of a structural panel. They're very resistant to denting. They're highly insulated. They don't rack and move much because the whole thing is foam filled, and it becomes, you know, I mean, these things are strong.
Right. And you're talking, you have steel then is what you're saying.
Yeah, steel. And it comes pre-finished. And, you know, when you're painting a piece of steel in a factory at whatever temperature and perfect conditions, you know, their paint lasts a lot longer than anything I can apply on site.
And does that mean they don't rust if it's stainless steel? Or not stainless, I'm sorry.
Well, you have to scratch them. I mean, you have to break that. Yeah, so I mean, I guess my garage door I've had, a couple decades, 20 years, and there's no rust on it because, you know, as long as I don't gouge it, scrape it, or scratch it, you know, it's made that way. So, but I think it's a top-of-the-line door. I'm a guy that, you know, it's the door we use more than any other door in
right.
the house.
Well, sure. The sandwich panel, is that the insulated package that you're speaking of, so I can reference that when I question? Or
no, that's another one. Are you familiar with a walk-in cooler like a refrigerator in a restaurant?
Yes.
That's how they're made.
Oh.
It's slick. I looked anyway, but it's the top of the line. You're paying for those features.
Okay.
And then you get the foam, the structure, the heavy steel, and all the goodies that go with it.
Okay.
And, you know, after a half century of service out of your wood door, I'd change it too.
Well, I know, and I was going to ask you that. Are we nutty, crazy, whatever? Because we still have the door, but it's got good bones. I mean, it works.
Yeah.
But when it doesn't work, we kind of hold our breath and think, oh, my goodness, I hope there's parts for it.
Well, there are parts for it, but, again,
you know what I mean.
It's like changing an engine on a car versus buying a new car. They have dramatically different life.
Well, sure, and you've got to be tender with them because, you know, they are. You need guys that really know, you know, what all about the door. I mean, you know what I'm saying. So we're kind of concerned. We're thinking, oh, maybe it's time. And for the expense, we have to go through the thought of, you know, what are our choices? And then we were, like I said, given quite a few.
And that's why I like a door company that will come out and tell me and recommend and look at the door opening and say, yeah, this is what I recommend. Here's your choices. This is why not? It'll work here. It won't work here. You know, there are limited headroom options on the tracks and stuff. So, you know, a lot of doors put in the 70s are a special thing now. So.
Oh, sure. I bet. I mean, again, it's worked for a long time. So we've gotten a lot of good service from it. One other thought too, fiberglass then is a no. I mean,
no, I like fiberglass. It's just different. When fiberglass ages, it tends to get fibery and, you know, those fibers can break off. So, you know, we have fiberglass ladders at Mosby and the old ones, we have to sand them every now and again just to keep the fire, you know, so, you know, a fiber door for a man door, like a 3 foot wide hinge door.
Right.
I love that product.
Okay.
But for a garage door, I like the rigid sandwich panels of the steel. They're just, I mean, I bought top of the line 20 years ago and that door looks brand new.
Okay. And you don't have to paint it or touch it up or anything.
No, we can. Okay. I mean, we can if we want to paint this color or that color.
Sure.
But, you know, painting a garage door, you have to leave the door cracks open and paint in between the grooves, and then the paint gets thicker, and then when it closes, it cracks the new paint.
Right. You're right. And we're trying to get away from that thought, you know, in the future. So, you're a wealth of information, and we appreciate it very much.
Well, I'd find somebody to take this voyage with because it's, you know, from the sales and specifying the door and choosing the options, you really need a guide like you've discovered, you know, going in and picking out a door and having somebody put it in. That's different than getting, you know, a company to come in and
Like,
look at this, size this thing up, what, you know, and then all the problems are theirs, not yours.
Right, right. So, and I appreciate the tip on entry doors because that'll be our next next thought to
now on entry off. Doors, I love fiberglass doors.
Okay, because we have the wood again, heavy wood.
Yeah. I'm okay with steel, and on some fire code doors, like going from the garage into the house, you can't use a fiberglass because that stuff burns. So you need a steel door to meet that 1.5 hour fire rating or whatever the code.
So you can't kick in a fiberglass door. I mean, for break-ins, is that easily? I know this wood would be hard to kick. You couldn't.
It's the frame that fails, whether it's a steel door, fiberglass door, or an iron door. It's the frame that matters. And then you get some of the door manufacturers that have multi-point locking that lock like a safe. You know, you'll see those on patio. Anyway, that's when you're getting into a really secure door.
I gotcha. Okay. Excellent. Thank you so much.
Oh, good luck. Good questions. Thank you very much for that
voyage. Thank you. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
All right, Carol. Bye now. Home Improvement, Scott Mosby, KMOX. There you go. Just a little bit. And it sounds like we talked about a lot of details there. That's very high level. I'm a generalist. It's a good overview for Carol to set her up for having a conversation with a door company. She's now not afraid of it. She knows there's a lot of options, and she's prepared to invest time into making a good choice and a good company. So, and that's really the mission of KMOX here on the Home Improvement Show. We want to empower you with enough information, logic, knowledge, and history that you're okay and you're comfortable making these choices and plans for your home. Scott Mosby, Home Improvement, going to take a short pause and come back for more after this. Thank you for joining me here on this lovely Saturday. Some Saturdays are more lovely than others, but, you know, a little sunshine here and there never hurt us. So anyway, I'll be right back for more after this. All right, we are wrapping up hour two on the Helitech Home Improvement Show. Thanks to Randy Pantano, who came in the first hour and answered some questions with us. I much appreciate that. Next up, let's go to the phones and talk with my friend Mick. Hey, Mick, good afternoon. Welcome. How can I help, sir?
Thanks, sir, for taking the call. Appreciate talking with you.
Sure.
So we have a home that has a master bath, hall bath, and then a bath was added a few years ago prior to us buying the home.
Okay.
We remodeled the hall bath and put hammer arresters in, but okay, the other baths don't have that. Mm-hmm. Can those be retrofitted?
Oh, sure. You have to open up the wall, and a hammer arrester is really just an air chamber. Looks like a little CO2 canister that solders into the pipe. But keep in mind, there's another thing here, Mick, that if you're still having hammer problems, those hammer arresters or air chambers get full of water. They get waterlogged, and you need to drain all the water out of your pipes to get the air back in. So because you have them in the pipes doesn't mean there's air in those places. You follow me?
Oh.
Yeah, man. Yeah, before you start ripping your wall apart,
Turn the water off, the water off, drain the pipes, turn the water back on, try it again.
Yeah, burp the pipes when you're done, and it takes a while. I mean, it takes about half an hour to gravity drain those pipes because of all the turns and the loops and the ups and the downs and all. So I just shut off the water to the house. I typically shut off the water heater, not that there's a big deal, but I just shut it off for safety just because.
Right.
And then I just go and I open the outside faucets. I open the laundry faucets in the basement. I open all the faucets upstairs. And you'll hear it just the water starts trickling out of the bottom and air starts going back into the faucets and shower heads on the top. Makes a funny sound like crazy. And
right.
I just walk away for half an hour.
Oh, that is great news.
Yep. And then remember to turn everything off, because because what happens is those air chambers will drain the water out, but there's no other side, there's no air makeup that lets that water come out. So that's why they will be the last pipes that drain. So you have to be very patient and do this wait for a long time for that water to keep dripping out of there.
Sure, no problem. All right, I appreciate that help, sir. Thank you very much.
You bet. Hey, remember when you get your water heater back on, burp that water, that hot water heater too, because sometimes, I don't want you to open the drain in your hot water tank, unless it's the only thing down in the basement that opens up. But make sure you you burp the air out of the top part of that water heater too by using the pressure pop-off regulator for that pressure relief valve.
Cool. Thanks for that tip.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I don't want you buying a new water heater just because we, drain the lines.
Sure. All right. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Take care, Mick. Bye now. Home improvement. Let's see what's cooking here and talk to my friend Greg. Hey, Greg, good afternoon. How can we help you?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call today.
Yeah.
I have a question about my detached garage. About 12 years ago, I built a detached garage. It's in the city of St. Louis, and about 3 feet inside the apron off the alley, I'm beginning to develop a little slight crack. I noticed that's sort of where, when I back the cars into the garage, that's where the front of the car is. I wonder, is that due to the weight of the motors there, or is that just a poor job of someone pouring the concrete?
That's Mother Nature. That's freeze. It's actually where the garage gets the coldest by your door, and it actually heaves your concrete floor. So that's expanding frozen soil pushing your concrete up.
Okay. Is that something I need to be concerned about, or a way to I should address that issue now, or?
No, it's cosmetic only. And, as long as you have an unheated garage, and even the engine block of your car doesn't warm that garage enough to keep that, in really cold temperatures, it comes in right through the front door, and that cold just keeps, freezing that. But that's why you have only it in that first 3 feet. That's how far the freeze gets inside your garage.
Okay, so it's not going to drop or anything and create a,
not usually. Nope.
Okay. Second part to my question, if I may.
Sure. Make it quick. I've got about 35 seconds.
Okay. It's a two-car garage. thinking of turning into a three-car garage so I can park my truck in the garage. Mm-hmm. Would I have to tear up that whole platform that I have now and just pour a whole new slab of concrete, or can one be abutted to what I already have?
Yeah, you can add it to the side of that two-car garage. You get into some architectural issues and fire separation for the city. They need to bless all this. But, yeah, you can add a one-bay garage next to a two-bay existing garage, you bet. Okay. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Sorry I had to drop you off there, Greg. Yeah, you bet you can add that garage. Thanks for tuning in. I'll talk to you next week here on University of Camo X.